Hey, everybody. It's Tuesday.
Yep.
And we went ahead. We pulled the trigger. We watched Exorcist 2, The Heretic.
Yeah.
And we paid for it.
Yeah, I mentioned it the other day. And my buddy Brian, that I went to the academy with, he's a dude that works on all those movies, you know. Worked on, VFW and Bone Tomahawk and everything, you know, working on that new movie about fucking Terror on the Prairie. But he's like, no, man, I heard you mentioning Exorcist 2. He says, go back and see it. It's a good movie. I think it's better than 3, actually. That's what he said. He says, it's kind of a
guilt. That's just crazy talk.
He said, he said, it's not a perfect movie, all right? But he says it's a guilty of pleasure of his. It's just kind of like an action-packed movie, you know? And I got to, Dino De Laurentiis and shit. And I gotta fucking agree with him. I'd seen it before, but I guess I didn't pay attention to it. I'm not sure I got through the first hour of it or so. Sometimes an old movie I really won't pay much attention to if Jenny's watching it. And I think Jenny watched it before.
Yeah, I've seen it a couple of times.
And I was probably doing something else at the time and just went, yeah, and just moved on, you know. But watching it and paying attention to it, yeah, I liked it.
Of course you did.
It was fucking crazy. But there's a lot of good things about it. It's got a lot of cool miniatures, all-star cast. James Earl Jones is in it. He's being kind of like Locust Doom, fucking Dulce Doom, Locust style.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of just
oh my god, crazy that would be an awesome shirt, like yeah. James Earl Jones with that locust head on.
Yeah.
It says Dulce Doom Locust style on
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
It's like that.
I would wear that.
Yeah. And, just Ned Beatty's in it
for like 5 seconds.
5 seconds.
Just, well, I mean, as high up as he was in the credits, I was expecting yeah. him to be in it more. I've seen it before, yeah. but I couldn't really remember.
Yeah.
It's weird because this movie is batshit crazy, but it's also like from a concept standpoint, the concept yeah. of it is crazy.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know. Like, people that said it was, like, action-packed, it's not, though. I thought it was, like, really dragged in spots. You know what I'm saying?
Something was always happening. They were in a constant fight with Pazuzu, pretty much. It's just the Italian Dino De Laurentiis fucking philosophy of, oh, well, you like that? Well, here's more of that. He just took the Exorcist, all right, and tried to amp it up and give you more of what was in The Exorcist. And that was a different way. In a different way. You know what I mean? There's airplane crashes in it. Fucking locust attacks.
Well, an almost airplane crash.
Yeah, that's right. People fucking falling off a
car crash.
Badass weird mountains in Africa that look like fucking, I don't know, look like fucking mud.
Falling down a crevice in like a really bad mountain.
Falling down. They're falling off mountains and shit and fucking... people are getting possessed like that. I mean, anybody can be possessed at the drop of a hat.
I could be
like.
Pazuzu right now.
All
I mean,
of a sudden,
seriously.
Pazuzu would get you.
All of a sudden,
yeah.
Bam, Pazuzu.
Yeah. It opens up with a pretty good scene of an exorcism and a fucking girl burns herself up, gets possessed and burns herself up. It's creepy. It needs to be remastered because the colors are looking a little dull. I think a remaster of this would probably be really cool
if anybody wanted to like bother doing it. This is out yeah. on Blu-ray though, so obviously they did do something
okay.
with it.
Then maybe
I'm sure it has a cult following because every yeah. movie does.
I don't know if we saw the Blu-ray version, but probably this what we saw, what we paid for off of Amazon Prime.
Yeah, that's Amazon
Prime. It's probably the same one you'd get on the Blu-ray.
What was it, $2.99?
$2.99. Okay, it's worth $2.99. Yeah.
I don't. Well, like I said, I wanted to talk about it because, okay. It's not as bad as I remember,
yeah.
but it's still pretty stupid.
It's got Richard Burton in it, man, and I think he's sober. Maybe.
Well,
I think he's sober.
The cast and crew would like to have a word.
No, they said he was drunk. Okay.
Not so much at the beginning of the shoot, but as it went on,
yeah.
I guess he just couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah.
Well,
and little Linda Blair is probably about 18 or 19.
She's 17.
17.
She
in
was
this
17 when
she's
shot.
17 in this
Her
one?
Character is supposed to be 16.
Okay. She's older than she was in the first one, and she's cute, man. You know, and she's just good in the movie. And they fucking got her doing crazy shit. Sometimes she's fucking looking like a little kid. Fucking then the next thing you know, she's running around in a damn see-through nightgown on top of a skyscraper, almost falling off. And then she gets possessed later on, and she comes at you like a damn porn star. She's looking all sexy, flirting with you and shit, trying to seduce the damn priest.
Even though she's underage.
Crazy. Yeah, but that shit didn't matter back then. They didn't look at it. I remember you remember how it was when we were kids back then.
Well, I'll get into that, because there's all kind of crazy shit going on behind the scenes of this. Right. So I'll get into that.
Shit's unacceptable today. You could never do that. But just the way society was, I remember fucking when I was, fucking in these times, these people were like hippies and shit, you know? They didn't really... You'd see a 14-year-old with a fucking 20-year-old or a 25-year-old. People didn't even fucking bat an eye. They didn't give a shit. The dude from fucking Twisted Sister, his fucking wife, Lisette, I think he met her when she was 13 or 12. I think he was about 19. He'd get in big trouble today. But she was the head of his fucking fan club. He was already fucking famous. I think she was only 16, 17. It was another time.
Yeah, but I will say that there's shit going on behind the scenes where even Linda Blair, like, reading in the script the shit that was supposed to happen in the movie, like, between her and the priest, she's like, absolutely not. I'm not doing that. Right. So,
Burton's like, damn.
Well, no, because that wasn't what... No, but see, this is what happens that you don't know, like, what was going on behind the thing, so you say all this stuff.
All right. I can't see all this stuff.
What actually happened was that... The only reason, okay, so originally when they were talking about doing a sequel, which obviously they were going to because the first Exorcist made all the fucking money and was like a massive success, right? Now, the first thing they were thinking of doing, they said, oh, we have a good idea. Let's just do some cheap, like $3 or $4 million movie that uses a lot of unused footage from the first one, and we'll just have like the same kind of thing, like a priest and he has to go and exorcise somebody, and we'll just use all this footage that we didn't use. It'll be super cheap, blah blah blah. But then eventually they're like, okay, well no, let's do an original story. Problem was, William Peter Blatty, who wrote the novel, obviously, and William Friedkin, who directed the first one, were like, absolutely not. It doesn't need a sequel. It's a self-contained story. It's a dumb idea. We don't want to be involved. And a lot of the actors didn't want to be involved either. Ellen Burstyn pretty much said the same thing. She was just kind of like, it doesn't need a sequel. I don't want to do it. She said they offered me a lot of money, but I said, no, absolutely not. Linda Blair actually didn't want to do it either at first. She was only 12 or 13 when they did the original one, and she was actually not going to continue acting at that point. She was going to go to veterinary school. But then they approached her with the script, which isn't what the movie turned out to be, but they approached her with the first draft of the script, and they said, hey, Richard Burton's going to be in it, and she was a big fan of his. And she'd always wanted to work with him. She's like, okay, I'll do it as long as you don't make me wear the demon makeup. And they said, okay, that's fine. Now, she said that the original version of the script was awesome. But the problem was that it was rewritten. She remembers it being rewritten like 5 times while the shit was going on.
Yeah.
One of the things, like, while they were on set, her and Richard Burton actually developed a sort of, like, you know, father-daughter sort of thing. So when she got to the point, the story I heard was that she was in the trailer one day, like getting ready, and the makeup people came in and said, they rewrote some shit in the script so that you and Richard Burton have to do this really, they didn't even like say what it was, but they said, it's bad. It's offensive. That was the word they used. They said, it's offensive. And she basically went to the director and said, absolutely not, I'm not doing it. So they had to like tone it way down, and it's still even kind of creepy nowadays. And they said they were really uncomfortable doing it. He was like my dad. Yeah. So it was like really, really creepy.
Yeah.
And he was really creeped out by it too, because it's like, ew, it's like making out with my daughter. It's super weird.
Yeah.
And especially, like I said, it was supposed to be like way worse.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they were going full on into like into rape or something like that, but that's kind of what it sounds like.
Right.
And Linda Blair said, absolutely not, I'm not doing that. Because, you know, she's like I said, it's like with my dad, and we're like friends and stuff, and that would be really weird.
Louis chimes in, reminds everybody that when Elvis met Priscilla, she was like 14 or 15. And he was in the army at the time. That was his commanding officer's daughter. Which, people think this 18-year-old thing, that was a federal, that's kind of a new concept. That was a federal law about photographing kids, like, pornography. You had to be 18 to be in any kind of nude photography. But the state, each state law had its own different law about what the age of consent was. So you could have sex with somebody under the age of 18, depending on whatever state you were in. I think Mississippi, the age of consent was like 13 or 14. And it probably still is. It's just nobody's ever changed it. If they changed it, maybe they've changed it recently, or they some states added statutory laws like if they're under the age of 18, you can't be any more than 4 years older than them or 5 years older than them, that kind of shit. But that wasn't around in fucking back in the 70s. Mm-mm. They did. They were all fucking taking drugs anyway. In these fucking Hollywood scenes. Fucking kind of degenerates.
Yeah, so, okay, so anyway, the thing about it was that since William Peter Blatty and William Friedkin didn't want anything to do with this movie, so they got this playwright named William Goodhart, and he came in and wrote the script, and his idea, which I'm arguing from the outset, probably not a terrible idea, he wanted to base it kind of around the original, like, a priest who was actually the original, like, the real guy that was the original inspiration for Father Marin in the original book. Which, like I said, not a terrible, so more metaphysical kind of direction. So they bring John Borman in, obviously, who also did Zardoz and Deliverance and Excalibur and all that. And he comes in, and his whole thing, and I'm not sure this is how, because honestly, this is barely a horror movie. It's not really scary. I don't know. I guess it's a horror movie, but I guess not. But the thing about it is that John Borman thought the original movie was quote-unquote repulsive. And basically his idea was, he's like, look, I have daughters, and I feel like the first movie was all about abusing children, like, for the sake of entertainment, pretty much. Mm-hmm. So the second movie, he's like, I thought it would be more interesting to go in a positive, uplifting direction. So he was the one that kind of went with the idea of going in a more metaphysical route where the demon was, like, attracted more to, like, good people.
Yeah.
Where, and you could argue, because I know that this movie does have its defenders, probably its most famous one being Martin Scorsese, who thought this one was kind of like, oh, like a, you know, Job type of story. But to be honest with you, I think it's scarier. Okay, the original Exorcist was scary because, one, the even though the demon, like, supposedly said it was Pazuzu, even though I don't think they even say the name Pazuzu in the first one, although they do in the book. Even though the demon says it's that, it's clearly, like, Satan. You know what I mean? It's, like, yeah. The big S.
I think they did say Pazuzu in the book.
They did say it in the book. They didn't say it in the first movie.
I think they did say it in the movie.
I don't think they said it in the first movie. In the book, they did.
I thought when they dug it up, when they dug that statue up, I thought that in the background or something, like the people singing, they said Pazuzu, I think.
Oh, maybe. But I'm just saying it wasn't really, like, yeah. Exposited to any great degree.
And then I think Father Marin said something about it's a statue of Pazuzu. I think he said that. I think it was mentioned. But it does never mentioned in the second part when there's a exorcism going on. I don't think it was ever mentioned there.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't really remember it being mentioned in the movie, although it was mentioned in the book.
I don't think Marin knew it was Pazuzu.
Yeah. So, but like I said, the implication in the first movie was that it wasn't Pazuzu. It was just like Satan, but he was just kind of masking himself as that, like, just to just to fuck with Marin specifically.
Yeah.
Because he'd found that relic, or I mean, that's how I took it. So one, it was the big S, which, you know, is really scary. Satan. Second thing was that there was no reason why Reagan was possessed. It was random, which is way scarier. So I think if you're going in a direction, I'm not saying it can't be done, but I think if you're going in a direction that the second one tried to go in, saying, oh, there's a reason, oh, by the way, it's not Satan, it is actually Pazuzu, which kind of, like, lowers the rank of the evil somewhat to just this one specific Assyrian demon.
Louis didn't think it was mentioned.
No, I don't think it was either.
I thought it was.
No, I'm pretty sure it's not.
I knew about it.
Well, maybe you read the book.
No, I never read the book.
Or, you know, just it's been filtered through so much media.
Yeah.
Because it was mentioned in the book.
Okay.
Just I'm pretty sure no one said that name in the movie, in the first movie. But in the second movie, it really makes up for it. Because
I always called that thing Pazuzu. I thought it was mentioned in the movie.
No.
Okay.
No. But like I said, it the movie seeped so much into the cultural consciousness, okay, and the book did as well.
I'm just imagining.
So it's easy to see that you think that, I'm sure it's kind of like that Mandela effect thing where you think that it was mentioned in the movie. I'm 99% sure it was not mentioned in the movie, though it was in the book. Because I did read the book. I have it somewhere, actually.
Dermot says, I saw this in the cinema, age 11, with my 10-year-old cousin, on our own. Yep, it was the 70s. Would never have today. Didn't like it, but have grown to like it. Is it so bad it's good? Yeah. I remember fucking my 14-year-old babysitter, 13 or 14-year-old babysitter, taking me to see R-rated movies in the matinee in the 70s. It didn't matter. And it was horror movies.
Yeah. You know?
Like, I remember seeing Amityville Horror. I think it was Amityville, or I saw the trailer. One of the two. Sometimes I did see, you know, The Evil. She took me to see that.
Yeah.
What year was that? 1980, maybe? Or 79?
I think it was 79.
79. So I'd have been about 11 or 12.
We reviewed that a while back.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'd have been 10. I was 10.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, so the thing about it is that I kind of just feel like it makes it, that's why I'm saying it's barely a horror movie, because it makes it a lot less scary that you're demoting the demon to some minor Assyrian demon that's just kind of like a locust demon that targets, and also that it targets people, like specific people, people that have psychic healing powers. So they're implying that Reagan had that, but that's never been brought up.
Yeah.
And it's only barely brought up in the movie, in Exorcist 2, when she's at this, you know, hospital or whatever she's at, and she makes that little autistic girl talk. That little autistic girl is played by Dana Plato, actually.
Yeah.
Of
Jenny
different
recognized
strokes.
Her, of all things.
Well, yeah. Well, I was, like, looking at her. I'm like, that is Dana Plato. She looks exactly the same as a little kid as she looked when she was older.
She had the same eyebrows.
Like, on Different Strokes. Yeah. She died very young, sadly.
Yeah, she became a rockhead.
But yeah.
Rockhead porn star.
It's just funny that I recognized her immediately.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because the other night I was watching the Riff Tracks version of a talking cat, which is not as awesome as it sounds.
No.
Although Eric Roberts did do the voice of the cat. But the guy that was in it, I'm looking at him going, that dude is a former child star. Who the fuck is it? And I couldn't remember his name, but I was like, no, Family Affair. And Tom looked it up, and he's like, yeah, it was Johnny Whitaker from A Family Affair.
Did not age well.
No.
That dude was my age in that movie. And, man, I was just like, dude, I felt bad for him. He looked like a 70-year-old little fat man.
That was a terrible, terrible movie.
Terrible movie.
Wow. I'm even Riff Tracks could barely save it.
Yeah.
I was like, well, at least he had a cute kitty in it. Poor kitty. His name was Squeaky. Maybe I'll talk more about that on the fucking sidetrack show, because, yeah, I got some thoughts about that fucking movie. But yeah, so Max von Sydow did come back, but he's also barely in it. He's only in, like, a couple flashback scenes, and they had to get a stand-in when they do the flashback for Linda Blair, because, like I said, she wouldn't wear the makeup. You know, can't say a blamer, to be honest with you. Well, honestly, what happened to her on the first film, I don't know if you know this, but they didn't use a stunt double on some of the scenes in the first movie when they probably should have. Because, like I said, she was only, like, 12. So they had her, like, you know the scene where she's, like, flopping back and forth in bed like that?
Yeah.
That was her, and they had her in a harness, and it actually, I think it broke her spine.
Damn.
So she actually subsequently had scoliosis.
Damn.
From that. So, you know. And another thing, too. I feel so bad for Linda Blair, because she signed on to this whole movie. I mean, she's just a kid. She was only 17. She signed on to this movie because Richard Burton was in it. And like she said, the original version of the script was actually really good, but it got subsequently rewritten and nobody really knew what was going on from day to day, it seemed like. I mean, just from, like, listening to people that worked on it. But, so she probably thought, okay, well, I'm not doing the demon makeup. So they didn't make her do that. But one thing they did make her do, you know those scenes where she's up on the roof of that building?
Yeah.
And, like, her, she did that.
Are they walking on that skyscraper?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen the movie, there's a couple scenes, like, she has this apartment, like a penthouse apartment. That's actually a real building. It's on Fifth Avenue. It's where the Warner Brothers offices were at the time. And they didn't hire a stunt double no safety equipment, no nothing.
Did she just have her standing on the ledge?
Yes! And fucking they filmed
crazy.
It.
Crazy sons of bitches.
I'd have been like, absolutely not. Yep. I mean, I'm really afraid of heights.
Yeah.
But it's yeah, like the shots story. Where you look... Holy it's like 40 shit. Stories. And she's like standing there, like right on the edge, like in her bare feet.
Yeah.
In a damn I don't even think gown. They had a harness or anything.
Idiots.
I'd have been like, you know what? It's like, what if she'd have just been like, you know, she'd be fucking dead. Holy crap.
You think that would put a man fucking. That'd be the end of somebody's career today if they tried that shit.
Well, that was, I
in
mean.
In the 70s, they
And especially she was like a minor. I mean, she's under 18. I mean, you would so get arrested for that nowadays, and rightfully so.
Well, going back to what I said before, 17, at that time in the 70s, you had guys in Vietnam at 17, 16, fighting a war. I think it was just another time.
I mean, yeah.
You had 17-year-old boys out in Vietnam fucking
I know.
Shooting
well, I'm just saying, it's just, you know, people can say all they want, but it's like, I don't really want to go back to a time where life was that cheap, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, just kind of like, there's lots of those. That's all right.
And it's like...
We'll just get another one.
People weren't expected to live very long anyway, and they fucking lived at a very fast pace, took a lot of drugs, fucking a lot of alcohol. They were fucking drinking and fucking smoking and dropping acid by fucking 14, 15. They lived fast.
Yeah, Louis points
By
out...
By 30, you were used up a lot of them, where they thought you were.
Louis points out Ellen Burstyn was also hurt in the first movie. Yeah, she was. The one scene where she gets thrown across the room, you know, and, like, hits the... She hits, like, a dresser or something like that, where Reagan throws her across the room. Yeah, she got all fucked up in that, too. So, yeah, William Friedkin... his methods were also quite questionable, but... Yeah. I guess you can justify it a little bit more because at least the movie was awesome.
Yeah.
This one, not
well,
so much.
The script was originally good.
Yeah, well, and they said what ended up happening was that they kept rewriting it. I mean, according to Linda Blair and according to a couple of other people that were on the set, they were like, they just kept coming up with all these new ideas about all this metaphysical stuff.
And just putting that in.
And they were just kind of like putting it in there. Yeah. So it's like no one, she kind of implied that no one really knew what was going on. And she's like, as the shoot went on, Richard Burton, who, you know, was another one of those kind of legendary drunks, they said he was okay, like, you know, for the first portion of the shooting. But then after a while, he kind of started showing up drunk. Nobody really knew what was going on, so we had to keep, so they had to make cue cards for the lines, because it's just, we just added this, so you have to kind of, and there are actually a few scenes in the movie where Richard Burton appears to talk directly to the camera.
Yeah, right.
I guess.
Who cares?
I know. So I guess it just seems like, I don't know. Like I said, there are a couple of good ideas in here. Yeah. I don't necessarily... mind. I don't love it, okay? What I will say is if the ideas in this movie had been presented in a context that didn't have anything to do with the original Exorcist, then I think people would be a lot more forgiving. You know what I'm saying? But I think that because the original Exorcist was such a masterpiece, I mean, pretty much any sequel you made was going to be a disappointment. Let's not say... anything about that, because that movie was just so good. It's like, how the fuck are you going to follow that? How are you going to make something just as good or better? It's just not going to work out. Well, and so I respect that they wanted to do something different, and I don't necessarily in isolation have a problem with the idea that they went with, that there's this specific demon that goes after people with this specific psychic power, and that he goes around in plagues of locusts and all this other kind of stuff. Like I said, like a Job type of story, like Martin Scorsese perceives it as. Yeah. I don't have a problem with that in isolation. I just don't think they should have tried to tie it back to the Exorcist story, because not only is the movie not that great by itself, but it also kind of shits on the first movie. You know what I'm saying? Like, retroactively, if you think about it too much.
Right. I gotta say that it's not as bad as I thought it was gonna be. I was entertained. It tried to do a bunch of stuff and show you a bunch of shit. It was trying to keep you entertained through the whole thing. It had good stars in it. The acting was good enough.
Yeah, the acting was fine. The acting was fine.
Some cool scenes where fucking dude falls on the spikes and wakes up. There's a lot of good ideas in it. It is kind of a mess.
Yeah, some of the shit's kind of goofy.
It's Dino De Laurentiis Studios. It's kind of doing what a lot of Italian movies do. They just give you some more. Oh, you like that? Well, here's more. Here's some more and here's some more. And they got a director who is, I think he's a good director, but he's out there, you know, with Zardoz and shit.
Yeah, and like I said, I'm not shitting on the dude because John Borman.
It was an ambitious story.
Yeah.
They added too much, probably. They said the original script was real good. Probably should have stuck with the original script. It probably would have been remembered better. They were just probably just trying to pack a bunch of stuff in it just to wow the audiences. That's probably what it was.
And I mean, I guess it was the 70s, and like I said, it seemed like they wanted to go in a more metaphysical direction. Yeah. So they wanted to tie in a sort of parapsychology slightly thing with the whole Louise Fletcher, you know, with her invention of the synchronizer, which essentially allows you to like put a thing on your head and look into a flashing light and have another person do that on the other side of the table.
Yeah.
And you can like go into their memories somehow.
Yeah, he invented some fucking paranormal, some parapsychological tools for paranormal investigations. And, you know, it would have wowed the audience at the time. I mean, they kind of did the same thing with the Entity, where the idea they're going to freeze a damn poltergeist, you know, inventing technology just to fucking show you some cool
shit. What the fuck were they smoking when they thought of, like, freeze that was the Entity. That was the Entity.
We need to see that again.
I've been wanting to rewatch that. Yeah. I actually really like that movie, except for the end, which is, like, dumb as shit, but the rest of it's good.
Hey, man, it was like an 80s action flick. Oh, we're going to catch this fucker. Yeah.
It was like Ghostbusters, but it wasn't supposed to be a comedy.
Yeah. And then another part three actually kind of was a good standalone. One, two, and three are much better than... Well, two and three are better than I remembered them or would have thought. Exorcist 3 is closer to fucking Exorcist 1 in tone.
Honestly, that's what you do if you actually want to make a quote-unquote sequel that does have some ties to the first one, but does something different with it, and I think successfully does something different with it. Because I think the problem with the second one, other than it having too many goofy-ass ideas that were kind of crammed in there, and also... I kind of feel like there weren't really any, it wasn't really scary, and there weren't really any stakes. What exactly was Pazuzu's end game? Like, what was he trying to do?
Fly around a bunch of locusts and fucking attack good people. And I guess eat your crops, I guess.
And it seemed like Pazuzu was really easy to defeat. So he didn't really seem like much of an adversary.
Killed
whereas,
most people, though.
Yeah, but like in the first one, I mean, we're dealing with like Satan.
This one reminded me a lot more of fucking the Omen. The tone, you know how the Omen 2 and Omen 3 kind of fucking was all over the place, and I like those too. I gotta say that, you know, the sequels are not as bad as I thought they were gonna be for The Exorcist and even Amityville Horror. Amityville 2 was good. When they go back to the DeFeo's and they go to the old DeFeo, I thought that was good. I didn't see 3. That was a 3D one. It's probably terrible. But then we saw 4, and didn't that involve the cat?
That was the one that we saw at Riff Tracks Live, wasn't it?
Is that 4?
Was that the one about the lamp. Possessed lamp?
That didn't have anything to do with anything.
That didn't have anything to do with anything.
Yeah.
It wasn't even in the same house or anything.
Terrible.
Like that.
Shit was fucking terrible.
I actually wouldn't mind seeing the Amityville 3 again. Well, I was thinking about it last night because I said, oh, I kind of want to watch Amityville 2. But then I was like, oh, wait, I think we just watched that not too long ago. I've seen Amityville 3, but it was a long time ago.
It's a retelling of the DeFeo murders and pretty accurate, pretty close to the case.
That's right. Yeah, we did watch that.
Yeah,
I think we watched it when we were doing a show about it.
In a way, it may have been better than 1 because I have 1 and I like it. But if you go back and watch it, there's not a whole lot to Amityville 1.
But that's, in a way, that's kind of its charm is that, I mean, it kind of like, it's, nowadays, if you made that, they'd call it a slow burn.
Yeah, well.
Because not a lot of it was, but other than like, you know, the wild overacting, like of the priest and stuff.
The early episodes out of the first, like, 5 or 6 seasons of A Haunting, their episodes are better than the Amityville 1 movie, in a way.
Yeah.
I mean, Haunting of Summerwind. I think it was a double episode. That bitch was badass on the first season of the Haunting series. Fucking, you know. That would have been, if that was in movie form and you put that in the theaters in the 70s, that would have been a huge hit.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Because you'd have it like a documentary.
Yeah.
They'd come out of there believing it, 100%.
Yeah, because they didn't really have, the first found footage slash thing was Cannibal Holocaust, right? But that was 70s. But not a lot of people in the U.S. saw it.
If you were to take The Haunting of Summer Wind off of that fucking television series, reshoot it 70s technology, run it alongside Amityville 1 in the theaters, it would have outsold Amityville 1. They would have loved it.
Yeah, it probably would have.
Yeah, and Summerwind would have went down as a fucking haunted house much bigger than the Amityville house. They'd be looking for it.
Wonder if they're ever going to make a movie out of the Summerwind thing.
Yeah.
You'd think they'd get around to it. They might already have. They've made so many haunting and possession movies, like cheaply. That
I was fascinated by that story until I started to investigate more and more about it, you know, when more stuff about it on the internet came up, photographs of it, and you realize there wasn't much to that case. They did a good job on that television program making that into something, though, with the edits. But no, liked it. Good movie. We got to see the Entity too now.
Yeah, that'll be one of the next ones. Yeah. Somebody says Boudica X says James Earl Jones' appearance in Extras 2 was bizarre. It was actually.
It was good though. I liked it.
You got to be like pretty goddamn dignified to turn up in the getup that he turns up in with the big knitted locust head on top of his actual head, and still kind of maintain your dignity. Well, I don't know. Did he arguably maintain his dignity? I'm not really sure. I guess he kind of did.
That's probably how he got the job for Tulsa Doom.
It probably is, honestly. Yeah. They're like, well, you're one of the few that we've seen that can actually wear something that goofy and still kind of look like you got some gravitas. So, you know.
Well, he was an Army Ranger from Mississippi. Of course he could do it.
But, yeah, so the thing about it is that, so, okay, The Exorcist II, The Heretic, very, very famously, even when it first came out, like, it was a huge, like, everybody was waiting to see it. Like, it was, oh, they made it, you know, a sequel to The Exorcist, so there's, like, massive lines around the block and everything like that. So it actually, like, broke a record, I think, for the time, the first weekend that it opened, but then after that it went, like, straight down the fucking toilet as word of mouth started. And honestly, I can maybe think of one critic, Pauline Kael, who is kind of an idiot, I have to say, like, from her other movie opinions. She liked this one better than the original, which, again, that's crazy talk. But I don't really get it, but okay, whatever. But she was basically the only one that had anything positive to say about it. Everybody else is basically like, this is the worst abortion ever put to film. You know, it just shits on the original. It's awful. What they said that when it premiered in New York City, that the audiences were just like laughing their asses off at it, and that there's a story that I think William Peter Blatty tells it. I'm possibly apocryphal. I'm not really sure, but he says at the first screening, somebody said, like, they were watching it, and somebody said, "Oh, the execs responsible for this movie are here." And they got chased down the street by like members of the audience, like not with pitchforks or anything. They were like, "There's like, who made this piece of shit?" And it was like, "Some of them are in here." And it was like people like ran. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's like a story that he likes to tell, like at conventions and stuff. But I mean, it must be said, like all the main critics of the day just thought it was like the worst thing ever. Now, I'm not going to say this is the worst thing ever in a universe where Coleman Francis movies exist. There is no way that this is even remotely the worst movie ever made. I mean, I've seen way, way, way worse movies than this. This is, you know, somewhat competently shot. The acting is fine. You know what I mean? So it's not like the worst thing I've ever seen. I'm not even really sure it's the worst horror sequel. I can't really say that because I haven't seen every horror sequel.
No, it's not that. It's not a worst horror
sequel. But it's...
No way.
It's just, it's not great. It's like, the more I think about the implications of the story and what it says about the first one, the more it almost seems like, and I don't know if this is what he intended, but it almost seemed like John Borman was trolling, or he was like making fun of the first one.
I don't think so.
I don't know, but it almost kind of comes across like that. I think it's in a way.
I think he was just trying to give more and make it more uplifting and make it.
He wanted to make it positive.
And then have it more like it's an adventure. It's happening, you know, in a bunch of different locations and a bunch of stuff happens. You get to see the demon more. You see more paranormal stuff. They're just trying to give you more. Yeah. They had good miniatures. You know what I mean? Had some decent special effects for the time.
Yeah, I mean, the special effects are actually not bad.
Yeah. The opening scene where they're in the church doing the damn exorcism and the girl burns herself up, I thought that was great. You know? It was just, I think the script went a little bit off the rails. It was just too much, I think.
Yeah, I think it just had too many.
Totally different tone than the first one.
Yeah.
If this was a standalone movie, they probably would have liked it.
That's what I'm saying. I think that it suffered.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's, you know, would have been a great movie, but I think it suffered being supposedly a continuation of the first story.
Yeah.
If you had taken some of these ideas, which are not bad ideas in themselves,
and just made your own new movie
that didn't have anything to do with that one,
probably done pretty well.
Then it might have done okay.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I just kind of feel like it suffers because people are comparing it to the original.
Exorcist is a tough act to follow.
Well, and everybody said that. They're like, look, you knew Warner Brothers was going to want a sequel because the original was such a massive, like, had such a massive cultural impact and made shit tons of money. So obviously they're going to want a sequel. And you know that it's not going to be as good. I mean, how can it be as good? There are very, very few movies in the world that are as good as The Exorcist.
Yeah.
So to think that you're going to make, like, more of that, but better than the first one or even as good as the first one, no way. So, but... You know, I don't know. It's an interesting movie.
The best one from this era that was a series that was continually good was The Omen. The Omen 1, 2, and 3 was good.
Yeah, I like all three of those, actually.
Yeah, The Final Conflict, I liked it.
It had a couple goofy moments, but not
not that bad.
No, it wasn't.
And the Blu-ray version had some stuff that I think was cut out of the versions they were showing on cable when we were kids. I think the ending was a little more complicated. It had some more shit happen to it. It made more sense. That's how I remember some stuff in the versions we saw online. I remember the ending being better than the original ending. So it must be like a director's cut.
Either that or you just imagined a better ending.
No. I saw a better ending than I remembered from the original.
Yeah.
Well, I know that that's true for Conan.
Yeah.
The original ending wasn't as good as the ending you have now. The theatrical cut. The theatrical cut ending wasn't that good. But if you go on right now and go watch Conan, it's got a different ending where the princess comes back with him to the temple. And to kill Thulsa Doom, and it's better. It has a better ending. They cut that out with a theatrical release. It's the first time I'd saw that. The first time I saw that ending was just a couple years ago.
Yeah. Louis says, Jenny, but it's got to be the worst sequel to a great movie, right? Yeah, it's probably got to be up there. Beesna says, Birdemic is the best movie ever. Yeah, and also Birdemic. I mean, Birdemic exists. So in that universe, yeah, this is not even remotely approaching the worst movie ever. Everybody settle down.
Yeah, no, there's some shit out there that's just unwatchable.
I mean, well, I'd argue though that Birdemic is actually pretty watchable just because it's so incompetent and hilarious.
Some of the most
it looks like it was made by aliens.
Some of the most unwatchable movies are Steven Seagal's later movies, and it's just because they're just so boring.
Yeah, they're very generic.
Very, very generic, very boring. Everybody's dubbed in them.
He's
dubbed in his own goddamn movie. And he's got fucking stunt doubles to walk up and down stairs for him so you don't see how fat he is. He won't shoot himself in full length, only his face. It's fucking bad, you know? It's not like a so bad it's good thing. No, it's just bad. Bad.
Well, I would argue that the greatest sin that a movie can make is being boring.
Boring, right.
Because it's just, you don't remember anything. It's like, wait, did I even watch that movie? Because it's just like every other movie. So like I said, if you're going to make a movie and you don't think you can make a good one, then just make it like really, really entertainingly terrible.
Right. Seagal only has two decent movies. Under Siege. And what was the other one? Hard to Kill. Some people will say, well, Out for Justice. Not really.
No, even the names of them are generic. I can't even... Shitcase Cinema just put up another one Steven Seagal review the other day, and it was really funny, but I can't even remember what the name of the movie is. Honestly, has anybody made a game? You know those, like, those poetry magnet games with, like, has all the words on little magnets, and you can rearrange them and make poems?
Yeah.
Has anybody ever done that, like, for Steven Seagal movie titles? Because they ought to.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot, though. He has a third one that's fun, and that's Under Siege 2. It's not as good as Under
Electric
Siege 1.
Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah, but it is kind of, it is fun to watch.
Not really.
But that, if you ask me, that's the last movie you'd ever want to
see.
I can't stand watching any of his movies. That's the last movie you'd ever want to see.
Because every time I look at him, I just want to punch him
The reason
forever.
Why Under Siege 2 is so good is because he's on a train with his cute 20-year-old cousin, and he's constantly flirting with her the whole time. You know he's getting ready to fucking fuck his little cousin and shit. Because he can't act. He just sees some fucking 20-year-old chick he wants to bang. And he just comes through every fucking scene. He's like, yeah.
Hey, I know you're only 18, but can I check you for breast cancer?
Yeah. I'm a Shiatsu master. Let me check you for lumps.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
He's so creepy. Fourth Row Down points out, okay, I'd agree with this. Some of the Howling sequels are way worse than this. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And honestly, The Howling is really, really good. It's not a masterpiece or anything, but it's like a really, really good werewolf movie.
Oh, yeah.
The second one, I watched the second one on cable back in the day, and I remember it being okay, but I tried to watch it again recently. It's unwatchable. I had to turn it off after like 10 minutes.
The Scanners was great. Scanners 2 is unwatchable.
Yeah, again. So there are worse sequels.
Yeah.
This one is at least interesting for how bizarre it is and how... I think a lot of people point that out because the thing about it is a lot of critics saying, oh, it's the worst sequel, stuff like that. A lot of critics weren't really, like, going into, like, the low-budget kind of horror movies, so maybe they didn't even see that or that's not, like, on their radar. I mean, this was a major studio production with actual real actors in it and a real crew and had a score. The score by Ennio Morricone, again, which was real weird. All that weird... singing and chanting, that was very, very strange.
Yeah.
And, you know, so there was that whole thing. Boudica X, I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
Boudica. Yeah, she's the fucking English fucking rebel princess that fought off all the damn Roman Empire. Boudica.
That's right. I know I'd seen that name before, I just never heard it said out loud. Compare Omen 2 to Exorcist 2. Night and day. Omen 2 was legit scary as hell, and the Omen 2 soundtrack and sound effects are the scariest I've ever heard, even scarier than the original Omen.
The whole Omen series, the whole Omen trilogy is
I like all three of those, like I said.
Yeah, fucking Hernandez got to jump in and saying that fucking Out for Justice is pretty good. I barely remember Out for Justice. I remember, what was the other one? Above the Law. I don't remember Above the Law. Out for Justice was the one where he was wearing the damn fucking black beret, right? He's a fucking...
Wait, was that just one movie where that happened?
God, man, it was fucking bad. He's supposed to be an undercover cop, and he's running around in a sleeveless shirt with his little fucking skinny beanpole arms and his fucking Army Ranger beret. He's on duty like a fucking hard ass and shit. Man, if a ranger saw somebody, even another ranger, wearing a fucking black ranger beret in his civilian clothes, he'd fucking knock it off his head. Pack, fucking take that shit off your fucking head. You don't wear your beret in your civilian clothes. Matter of fact, that's some cheesy ass shit to do anyway. Leave the fucking uniform alone. You go, if you get back in a uniform, somebody's gonna die. It's that kind of mentality. But, no, which is the one where he had the black beret. That one was fucking terrible. People liked it, but it just drove me fucking crazy. And then the other one, the only one that I thought was good was Hard to Kill, where he comes up out of the damn coma, and he's working, he's got his wife with him, his wife in real life, what's her name, one from Weird Science.
Kelly LeBrock,
yeah. And it's him and Kelly LeBrock, and he spends the whole fucking movie running like a bitch with his arms flopping. And fighting dudes and trying to get to the dude who nearly killed him. That one was a good one. Because it was kind of like Terminator, in a way. Or fucking Commando. It's like that. And fucking Under Siege was good. That was the poor man's fucking Die Hard. I liked it.
I'd rather just watch Die Hard.
Yeah, but Tommy Lee Jones was in it, fucking chewing up.
But Tommy Lee Jones was in good movies too.
Yeah, and he was, and had the other fucking guy, the little fucking Boosie, what's his name? Was one of the Boosies? I think it was Daddy Boosie. And
I thought it was Jake Boosie, the son.
It was the daddy.
Oh, okay.
The one from fucking Silver Bullet. Okay. It was him, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, okay.
And they just did a fucking great job and fucking. And that was the one where Seagal seemed to be the most natural. You know what I mean? They got pretty good shots of him and they kind of portrayed him as a person. But fucking, after that, he was fucking off the chain. He couldn't. Hollywood was out to destroy him after that because fucking nobody could stand him because he was such a dick.
I mean, objection, Your Honor. I do not think that Steven Seagal is an actual person.
No.
I think he's an alien in a fat skin suit.
No, Steven Seagal is something he made up.
Because he doesn't remotely act like a human being.
No. He's a total 100% fraud. 100%.
Yeah.
I mean, he does do a little bit of that fucking hokey ass fucking jiu-jitsu fucking, which is not a real it's a martial art, but it's not a real deadly one. And he does do that, but he can't act, and he lied about his background. He just lies about everything. He's a pathological liar. And fake. Total fake.
Danny Rowling Ghostface says, in my opinion, exorcism films have run their course in theaters just like zombie films. Yeah, we have enough exorcism films for now, thanks.
Yeah, there's a shit ton of bad ones, too.
I mean, there's a lot of good ones. There's still good ones being made. I'm not saying that, but it's just kind of like, it's just really, if you want to make a really good exorcism movie or a really good zombie movie, I mean, you really have your work cut out for you because they've made so many and they've made so many from like all different angles that if you can like think of something original and think of something that's going to be like mind blowing, I'd be fucking shocked.
Yeah, Louis. Yeah, it's Aikido, Louis. That's right. Go ahead.
Mr. Roboto says anything with Linda Blair is a masterpiece. I kind of feel bad for little Linda Blair because look, she was in fucking The Exorcist, you know, arguably, not even arguably, one of the best movies ever made, easily one of the best horror movies ever made. So she's in that, and then she was kind of like, well, I think I'm gonna go be a veterinarian, which maybe she should have done, I don't know, because it seemed like she ended up in, and she's not a bad actress.
She's cute.
Cute girl. She could act decently, and she just ended up like in some terrible stuff. And I just kind of feel like maybe just because she had big boobs and she was cute, so everybody was like, well, let's put her in these like really fucking trashy, because she always ended up in like real trashy like women in prison type shit.
That's all she could get.
Which, you know,
she really would have had a great career in porn, like I said before, but. In that era, that was once you went into porn, you could never come out. So she didn't do it. Instead, she did fucking softcore midnight movies, which was porn, but just not really.
I mean, I would argue she was good in Hell Night. I liked that one. That slasher movie.
What happened with her is that same thing happened to her as what happened to Mark Hamill. She went into that role and she got typecast, and that's who she was going to be. She was going to be little possessed Reagan for the rest of her fucking career. You just couldn't stop that from happening. Same thing happened to fucking Mark Hamill. Star Wars destroyed his career. That's all he could be was Luke Skywalker.
Well, that's the double-edged sword of having a role like that. Yep. It's like, honestly, in some ways, you know... Actors that can't really get a role like that would kill to have a role where, like, everybody in the fucking world knows that character and knows that face. But if you want to do something else with your career, good luck with that. Now, it's not going
to
happen.
Hamill was able to shake it back, but not on the big screen. He shook it back in the voice acting.
Yeah.
And there are some fans of his that only know him or just fucking love him from his voice doing the Joker.
So at least he, like, found something to, you know...
So some people are like saying, oh, no, his work as the Joker was much better than...
Oh, everybody loves Mark Hamill's Joker.
Yeah, so, you know.
He also made a cameo on the new Netflix Mystery Science Theater.
He came out, he was in some bad fucking movies. Some of them were, like, almost good, but they just were fucked up. One of the ones was called The Giver, where he played a fucking live-action film of a fucking Japanese anime about fucking bio...
I remember that
...armor you can put on. Had great fucking costumes. It was like something out of Power Rangers, but just the script wasn't any good. It was too...
Well, I think it was marketed towards like the 10 to 13 audience. 10 to 14 year old audience.
I remember seeing it on cable, but I remember very, very little about it. I mean, it must have been successful enough. They did a second one, right? I think
I don't think he was the Guyver in the second one, though.
No, I don't think he was in the second one either. He was in Corvette Summer with Annie Potts.
Yeah, and I don't think that did well.
No.
Now, Brian was saying to watch that Linda Blair's best movie was Roller Boogie.
Yeah, somebody's...
It's hard to find.
Robert H. just said her magnum opus Roller Boogie was only 2 years after this.
Yeah.
I think I saw that when I was a kid.
He says it's good. He said it was good.
But...
It's just hard to break away from this role. She was Here's another thing. Is that she was stigmatized for her role as Reagan in the first
Yeah, movie. That too.
Because they were like, oh man, she shoved a cross up her cooch? No.
When she was 12?
Yeah. She did not do that. That was suggested in the movie.
Yeah, they don't show... Well... They don't really show it. Exactly.
No, she simulates.
They very skirt around it, though.
Yeah. And because of that, I think that tarnished her. You know what I mean? So they're like, oh, she's, not her. Which was weird for the 70s. Because the 70s was like artistically real permissive. But there were still a lot of straight-laced people in terms of like customers who went to go see movies. So evidently the industry was kind of afraid to put her in any other role than something having to do with horror. Or, Boogie Nights, Or what was it called? Roller Boogie.
Yeah, Boogie Nights. That's a totally different movie.
I haven't seen it. But a lot of times movies like that didn't do too well either, like fucking Xanadu didn't do too well, which I liked it. I like Xanadu. It's all right.
Xanadu's kind of fun.
Yeah. But,
good theme song.
This was just getting high token out movies watching. Yeah, man. Yeah, man. Pass the joint. That's what they were doing in the drive-in. Legs coming out through the open windows and shit. Cars bouncing. Yeah. The fucking hotels of the fucking drive-in was the hotel of the motels for the 1970s and 80s.
Yeah, I kind of feel like even as freewheeling as the 70s was, The Exorcist was still pretty controversial.
Well, I think the Satanism element.
That too. Even though, like I said, if you think about it, it's a very pro-Catholic movie. It's a pro-religion movie. They're positing that God is real, that Satan is real, and that the priests, like, defeated the devil.
Yeah.
The priests are the good guys. They're the heroes.
70s and 80s was weird. I mean, then you had the Blue Lagoon thing and fucking Pretty Baby. That was fucking, what's her name?
Brooke Shields,
which is, she was basically a kiddie porn star in a way.
Yeah. Even at the time, some people were kind of like,
what? And then, which makes you wonder, like, fucking Michael Jackson was fucking into her. That's weird when you think about it, what happened to him and what he was accused of.
Just weird shit. Badass Domain asks, did you guys see the Exorcist TV series on Fox? I didn't, but I wanted to see it because I actually heard it was pretty decent, And then Boudica X says, Tarantino has no credit. Yeah, because Quentin Tarantino is another person that has gone to bat for Exorcist 2, saying that he really likes it. I don't know if he said that he liked it more than the original, because like I said, that kind of seems like the thing you would say just to be like, ooh, hot take, you know what I mean? Just because, obviously, it's wrong. But, you know what I mean? So, I don't know. Yeah, Tarantino has no credibility. He says Charles in Charge was the greatest sitcom in history. Yeah, I kind of feel like he's just trolling. He's just saying outlandish shit, like, to get attention.
Read what Boudica X said about fucking Steven Seagal.
Where?
I'll read it.
I can't see it.
Boudica X says, Steven Seagal worked undercover for the CIA. He invented Aikido. He taught MMA fighters how to upkick, and most importantly, he invented buffalo wings. You're fucking right. You not only invent buffalo wings, he ate most of them. He ate most of the buffalo wings.
I think he probably ate like a good portion of the world's buffalo wings, judging by the girth.
You got to see the Asian Experience commercial he made with the fucking energy drink, Asian Experience.
And then take a bleach shower afterwards because it'll leave you feeling really, really dirty.
Hey, baby, I'm ready to have an Asian Experience. She goes inside the swimming pool with shit with his.
She's like, am I getting hazard pay for this commercial?
Just go in the pool. I'm coming. I'm going to drink all that. So I'm gross. Drinking. You're just sweetening the pool up for me, baby. Come on over here. Yeah.
He's a fucking slimeball, man.
That's nasty. So unsanitary.
And what's funny is that if he was self-aware that he was a slimeball and hammed it up, it would be kind of funny. He's not.
That's why he's such a chode, because he's not in on his own joke.
No.
He's a joke to everyone but himself. Yeah, that's why he's a joke.
Me impersonating him doing that is far less seedy than when you actually see it. You know, when you actually see him do that. Because he's aware.
He's serious. Right. Like, he thinks he's being, like, charming and slick and sexy and everything, and everyone else is just like, ew. Ew.
I think that's about it for fucking.
Fourth Drawer Down says Van Damme was briefly in Roller Boogie. Well, now we pretend. Okay, now we're really going to have to see it. So we're going to have to see Roller Boogie, The Entity, and some stuff like that. Mr. Roboto says the 60s and 70s loved making Satan movies. I know, there were so many. Honestly, I love Satan movies. I loved all those fucking, you know. I think, Rosemary's Baby, that was like the first big one. And then I feel like there was a lot of, you know, somebody said Race with the Devil. Yeah, we reviewed that not too long ago, actually. Yeah, Race with the Devil is actually really good. Yeah, I think the Satan movies died about the 80s. Cocaine changed the game.
Yeah.
Boudica also says, I'm old enough to remember the hysteria associated with The Exorcist, the first one. Yeah. You know, I was only one when the movie came out. People were fainting in the theaters. People were having nervous breakdowns after seeing it. Yeah, there's news footage. I don't know if this was just like hype from the studios back then, but I don't know if the studios were savvy enough to have done this. Interviewing people in the thing being like, man, I just couldn't take it anymore. They're like sitting, I left my friend in there by herself, and it's like they had barf bags and all this other kind of stuff. People talk about people being sensitive nowadays. I'm like, holy crap, they just go see a movie and they're puking in the aisles and passing out and stuff.
They weren't used to seeing.
They'd never seen anything like, I mean, yeah, I mean, The Exorcist, you know, it's a lot for 1973. It was a lot to take in, and people really weren't ready for it, I guess.
I grew up, you know, by the time I was 6 or 7, I were still talking about the movie. I was four when it came out.
Yeah.
But I just grew up knowing about that movie. People talked about it all the time. I thought, when I was a little kid, I thought it might have been something that really had happened. It took me a while to understand that movies, just because it was in a movie, didn't mean it didn't happen to somebody. You know what I mean?
You thought every movie was based on a true story?
Kinda.
Essentially?
Kinda. Until I was, you know, maybe 7 or 8. Well, no, because...
Oh, little Tom.
No, because the kids would tell you that it was.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, the novel was loosely based on a quote-unquote real story.
So I thought that girl had really existed because the little kids thought that.
Oh, okay.
You know. I never saw the movie. Not too much later.
Boudica said it was unreal. No movie before or since had that much of an impact. Yeah, I can't really think of one. Not an impact, a cultural impact in that way. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
you could say Jaws had a huge impact, like just for everybody wanting to see it. Nobody wants to go swim in the ocean, shit like that. But The Exorcist, that was like a whole different vibe. And the interesting thing too, and I had totally forgotten about this, is that The Exorcist, as shocking as it was for 1973 and how everybody like flipped out about it, it was also immediately considered a classic, really. I mean, it was nominated for what? Like 10 Oscars, right? Including Best Picture, which is the first horror movie to ever have that happen. And it didn't even happen again until 1991, though, Silence of the Lambs, which some people don't even think is a horror movie. It is, but, you know. And then, Holy Parish of Doom says Exorcist is still shocking, in my opinion. Yeah, parts of it kind of are. I mean, everybody's jaded nowadays because we've seen everything. So it's kind of hard to go back to that time period, like when nobody had seen anything like this and, you know, and watch it. But there are some scenes in this that, you know, I guess if you didn't really know anything about the hype of it and you watched it, you'd be like, holy shit, you know what I mean? I think it holds up, like, beautifully. I think it's really, I mean, you know, it's a classic. And like I said, you can watch young horror movie fans watching it for the first time that have never seen it before. And even though it's been parodied and ripped off and shit like that, the first movie still has, like, a lot of the same impact that it had back then.
There were two other movies that me and the kids in elementary school had a hard time fucking dealing with, thinking that maybe it was real. One of them was something, there was a girl named Sybil who had all these different personalities.
Yeah.
They were all talking about it, and nobody knew, you know, I don't know if there was a movie or a book about
it. Yeah, there was.
But they were, and that was hard to get my head around.
There was a book and a movie. I read the book and I saw the movie.
And it was around the same time as this, you know, I was probably about third grade, maybe.
We did a show about her.
Sybil, yeah, and they were talking about that. And fucking kids were fucking pretending to be her. Weird shit, you know, playing. Oh, look at it, Sybil. You know?
I have multiple personalities.
Yeah, yeah.
It's people hilarious. Like,
not really knowing what that was. Another one was, shit, what was it? Then the other one that was fucking everybody up when I was a little kid was Carrie. We thought that was based on somebody that was real, too.
Yeah.
Girl who could burn things up and fucking throw knives with her mind and shit like that.
I wish.
And then she had pig blood on her. You know? That's all we knew about it.
Cause y'all didn't know about the Stephen King book?
No. No, didn't even. And they made a movie about her. That's the way, that's how a little kid does it. They made a movie about that? Yeah, she had pig's blood on her. She could make things move with her mind. She killed her mama. Oh. You know,
that's fucked up.
That's all we knew of the story. You know?
Honestly, I don't know. Like, I was a very imaginative child, but yeah. I really don't remember ever thinking that movies were all based on true stories, I gotta say.
Well, the first time I would... back in those days, your first time coming in contact with the movies was hearing about it on the play yard from other kids who were told about it by their older siblings. So yeah. By the time it got to you, you're being told that this is based on a real person.
Yeah, okay.
You don't, you know what I mean? It's not.
Right.
Because it starts off as a story.
Yeah.
Being told to you by
it's
another
like
little kid.
It's like an urban legend type
right,
of
right, exactly.
situation.
Being
sure.
told to you by another little kid as if it's something that actually happened. It was a different time.
Louis says, my mom saw The Exorcist when it came out. She told me half the audience left before it was over.
Yeah.
I could see that. I mean, once that sweet little girl starts like swearing and, you know, jerking off with a cross and whatnot.
Yeah.
I can imagine people are like, oh my God, won't someone think of the children? And they were like leaving and getting all offended and shit. But yeah, so while Exorcist 2, I would argue, it's not the worst movie ever made. It's not an abomination unto the Lord. It's not worse than cancer or Hitler or whatever. Because I know, well, you know how people like to do the fucking hyperbole all the time.
Worse than Hitler.
Yeah. I thought of that Spider-Man meme where it's like, that movie gave me cancer. But yeah, but I mean, it's not that bad. But, you know, I've seen, you know, hundreds of movies worse than this one.
Yeah.
I just, and it's interesting. It's an interesting cultural relic in compared to the first one, because I'm just interested how it could have gone so drastically awry. But I don't know. It's not as terrible as I remember, but it's still not that great. And I think the thing that pisses me off the most about it is that it downgrades the original in retrospect, which kind of like annoys me.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Kind of like new Star Wars.
Well, I don't even know. Yeah, I mean, maybe that did the same thing, but yeah. I kind of feel like Exorcist 2 like did it way more because it was just kind of like, oh, well, we're downgrading the evil to like this lame little demon and it's not even that powerful. You can basically just like wave your arm around and beat it. It's like, you know, if you have the special psychic powers, which, oh, by the way, we never mentioned before. It's just, I don't know. It seemed like they were retconning some shit and, you know, it just seemed like a mess is what it seemed like. It's still worth watching. Just for how goofy it is. And there are some interesting ideas in there. But you can tell that it was a very troubled production. You know? You can tell. Yeah. So I guess that'll do it for today's show. Be sure to come by tomorrow evening for our regular episode at 5 p.m. We're going to be talking about the Pennsylvania Torso Murders. Which everybody's heard of the Cleveland Torso Murders. But hardly anybody has heard of these, even though they might be related. So we're going to be talking about that tomorrow night. So thanks, everybody, for dropping by and talking about Exorcist 2 with us. And we will see you guys tomorrow.